12:15. You do have to turn the mic on because it just can't do it itself. Okay, 12:15 at News Radio 560 KPQ. 28 degrees out in Wenatchee, and our guest today is the top man at the Sheriff's Department, the Sheriff of Chelan County, Brian Burnett. So consider this. I mean, no one asked me, but I have observed that the law starts here, goes over there, and that's where the order starts. Law and order. First law, then the order. Simple equation that most of us are accustomed to, but you have to understand, and I know you do, that for some, the very idea of laws creating order is just too much for them. They misconstrue phrases, they look for loopholes, they go for obvious gaps in our feelings of security, and that's why we need the sheriff and his deputies. But their job is tough. Imagine the frustration of always being on call to block the lower antisocial tendencies of our criminal classes, who are drawn to felonies and misdemeanors like Fisher drawn to bait, suckers drawn to Vegas, Sasquatch drawn to Blewett Pass, or sometimes as bad is drawn to good with the hopes of making off with your silver candelabra. And it's a peculiar part of our nature, don't you think? The criminal need to crime around with crimey notions during otherwise productive hours when simple people are doing simple things, but criminals always on the lookout. Professional criminals are certain to be caught. They know that. The odds are against them. They're going to be apprehended. They're going to be ensconced in the hoosegow, no matter how clever they imagine themselves to be. The slammer awaits the crime-ridden person or persons like a tuna fish sandwich is waiting for the laborer at noon, but he never gets there because the black lab eats it instead. Where's your criminal reward? Ask the black lab. Law and order, it seems, to catch or to nab the uninitiated, rewards the black lab and sends everybody else to jail. Natural selection at its best. And now, our authority on the matter of where law starts and how order begins, which comes first, in fact, we don't even know, the Chelan County Sheriff, Brian Burnett. Sheriff, welcome back to KPQ.
Michael, I'm just trying to figure out the chicken and the egg question. You kind of built me up pretty high there.
It's the law comes first and then order.
Okay.
You know that. It's good to see you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's good to be here on this spring day.
Well, yeah, this is spring. Well, 28 degrees out there. We'll book another one before you leave. How would that be?
Okay.
Let's start with the, we've had a number of social media threats. Kids may be making a real threat, maybe making an imagined threat, maybe trying to get even with somebody, maybe feeling picked on, but making a threat about their school and doing it in social media. When that occurs, and it has a couple of times this year, what do you guys do? What's the first step?
Well, the first step is always, where does the information come from? Who receives it? Did our office receive that? Did the school district receive that? But generally what happens is it's a collaborative effort, and we worked well with the school district. In this case, the one I think you're referring to, is this happened here a week or so ago, and it kind of involved the Cashmere School District.
Mm-hmm.
And they got right on it, and the great thing there is we have a full-time school resource officer that works within the Cashmere School District, so they went right to Deputy Mutch, and Deputy Mutch started working on this and then brought in our other detectives and some other deputies as well to try to track this down. And one is to bring, is there validity to this? Is this real or is somebody just out there, you know, playing a prank or what that is? But you have to treat it as it is real until you can prove otherwise, because one, we're out there to maintain public safety.
What choice do you have?
And the peace. Yeah. And to deter and eliminate any type of threat like that there would be. And then if there is a validity threat, for us to go in and investigate it and apply, potential charges there as well.
And if you think it's a prank, you still have to act and find the student, I suppose.
Right. I mean, well, you can't, you got to kind of either have to prove it or disprove it. And it doesn't take long generally to find out some information that will start pointing you on that track. But just one piece of information generally isn't good enough. You need to gather some information. You talk to some different people. And generally these things are brought to light because there's some concernment. People are concerned. Otherwise, most people won't speak up unless they truly think that there's a concern there.
Have you seen a level of panic or concern among the students that they're actually worried about someone shooting up the school?
I wouldn't call it panic, but I think that in the underlying tone that because we've seen events around the nation, or even you could even go, internationally, there's different events is where people are, trying to do mass casualty events. That's in their mind. So they kind of process that. And again, that's part of the, I get to say it, it's a fear factor, but a part of that is putting people in a learning environment that they're free from fear so they can focus their attention on learning and applying themselves. And if they got to occupy space in their brain and it's stressing them out, they can apply themselves to the scholastic part of it. And to me, that's not what school's about. And you can't be an effective student and progress. And people, you know, all stress does an amazing amount of harm to
it does
to you physically. But again, you know, loss of sleep, this on it just can tend to steamroll on.
Can the trained eye just look at a boy's room, assuming that this is a male that's authored this threat that we're talking about, or any threat that's similar? Just a cursory look at the room might reflect who his personality is, or is that?
I guess you could. You know, it just depends on where they're at, because a sociopath could really externally. Yeah. And really show that, hey, this is someone that's operating normal in society. And boy, I would have never thought or guessed that about this person. But then internally, the workings and the way they hide it, you know, can I get into their hard drive or their laptop, so to speak?
Which is
interesting. Can I get into the hard drive of their brain also? So different people, they displayed in different ways. I think in this case, there were some pretty obvious things that were done by this individual that were concerning. It was beyond just having a thought on the topic, that they took several steps to indicate that, yeah, there's a concern here that they may or may have not meant to take additional steps that could put people in harm.
Does the school help you find the right student? Because everybody's got a name online, but it may not be their own.
Oh, the school's a great resource. Students are a great resource. And that was part of our initial discussion, as we met with the school district the next day, because there was some concern that we had put out information that maybe, you know, it was a little difficult for them, because they have messaging that they need to do. They need to send home information to the students and the parents to say, hey, your student is safe here, so don't be worried about that. Again, we don't want to add stress to people's lives. We want to minimize that, and we want them to know that, hey, it's okay here, and they weren't targeted. And one of the biggest pieces that went out was there was some information that led people to believe that the individual was a student of the high school, and he actually hadn't been to school there since he was in sixth grade. So there was a real long segment of time which this person had been engaged in the school district there. And so once we went back and we call it a talk back and brief back, is, okay, what worked well and what could we do better next time? And we do that in law enforcement all the time, and we do that with the school district as well. And once we talked it through, realized, you know what, the investigation and people coming together collaboratively was a great outcome. It worked as it should. Okay, but it's still, what can we do next, a better time to get some information flowing? And a lot of that time, it could be as simple as, what day did it happen on? When did it happen? Who was working on staff for the sheriff's office? And how do you get that information in a timely manner if you're limited on resources at the time? But again, what's important to the school district so they can get their message out, and just having us work together is really important. So
there's a level of urgency to get the thing settled quickly.
Again, because social media or people are taking their, they're filling in the blank, and it's usually not positive. And again, that creates fear and restlessness, and that's what we're trying to minimize, is to make sure that people, hey, if you don't have something to be worried about, we want you to know that. And if you do, we're going to put some things in place to try to minimize that and keep people safe anyway.
The crazy part about it is, I don't know how many of these incidents you've had to respond to, but the chances are, if they are repetitive, even if it's just a threat on media that has no basis in violence or an intention of violence, even though they might threaten it, you always have to act as if it's that way. So it drives you guys crazy. It drives me crazy to hear about it.
Yeah, we don't overreact, but we react and investigate it, and then again, if it heats up and it shows us indications that, hey, we got a problem here, and everything is leading in the direction that, this person is meant or taking steps to do these things, so then we actually, you know, apply the pressure and appoint the appropriate amount of resources to eliminate that threat or to finalize the investigation.
Does the school call the lockdown, or do you?
It could be either or. A lot of times we'll have some stuff going on, maybe externally from the school district, in a local area that might be, you know, important to them, especially when you look at timing. Is it towards the end of the day? This discussion, when we met with the school district, they brought up a previous event where, our staff had been out in the Kashmir area doing some investigations from some burglaries and implementing some search warrants. and where it had involved some stolen firearms. Well, they end up doing a high-risk felony stop right in the parking lot of the Cashmere School Administrative Office
Perfect.
Parking lot, which is adjacent to the elementary school. Now, this wasn't planned. This just went down that way. And, of course, through discussion, you know, the school district's like, hey, did you guys plan this? Because if you did, boy, we would have sure liked to have known about this. And said, no, that is not, we would definitely not plan something like that. And if so, but again, there's times where things, you know, we have to react to that are out of our control and to do the best. At the same time, the outcome was really good. But again, just that communication, and it probably been something that would have been best to, hey, pop in and talk to the school district afterwards. But again, it was unplanned. They had this person that they knew that they needed to make a stop, and when they did, of course, that person pulls into the, you know, to the parking lot there. It's not always the best scenario, but again, it was the resolve was great. The ending was great.
And this kid from Cashmere had some resentments, but he poses a threat or only perhaps a mental check?
Well, I think it was minimal. I think the steps that we're taking from my point of view was that it was increasingly alarming that he had done certain steps and or researched certain things. That was not norm. But the individual was very cooperative. As a matter of fact, he had got word that that the police were looking for him. And so he actually called in, dialogued with our investigating deputy from the school. And what we did is he kept him busy until we sent other officers to his location to detain him and complete that investigation.
A good ending to the story. Let's talk a bit about the Columbia River Drug Task Force, because I was looking back at some of the headlines that you guys have covered on and list on your website, and that was a big bust, 50 grams of methamphetamine. That was a big deal.
That would be.
Start, if you can, by describing what the Columbia River Drug Task Force is comprised of.
Okay. Well, the Columbia River Drug Task Force has been in operations for a long time. And at one time, I think it involved five agencies, and that was when we went as far back as when Chelan PD had their own department. It involved Chelan PD, Douglas County Sheriff's Office, East Wenatchee, Wenatchee PD, and the Chelan County Sheriff's Office and the Washington State Patrol. And in 2004, we were receiving a lot of funding through the Bernjag grant. And I want to say $400,000 plus. That money would be distributed evenly between the agencies,
mm-hmm.
minus the State Patrol. The State Patrol does not receive funding for that. And it would fully fund an administrative specialist position that helps run that task force. And then the rest of the money would go between those agencies and the prosecutor's office. And so and in 2004, the funding was cut drastically. And then what we saw is that Douglas County Sheriff's Office and East Wenatchee Police pulled away from that, and they were actually given a portion of their cost that they had invested over time and or what the total funds in that account were, because we have that money that comes in from the Bernjag grant, but then there's also from felony seizures and such that they do. That from the sales of those seizures, then it would also go in and help fund that task force. And then later, let's move fast forward to 2011, and they do annual or maybe it's every other year, the peer review will come in and do an on-site review. And one of the things they came back and said, hey, why don't you have all of your local agencies involved in this? And they actually put in there mandated at the time, myself and Chief Tom Robbins from the Wenatchee PD go and engage both the Douglas County Sheriff's Office and East Wenatchee Police to invite them back in. And so we spent several years having that discussion, and finally, I think in 2014, East Wenatchee came back in. And what we did is, because they had that buyout when they left the Columbia River Drug Task Force, we just applied that to what would be their portion of the funding now. And you have to look at it now as we went from 400 plus thousand to, I think we're barely, maybe roughly, if we're lucky, maybe 125,000 a year to split for that. So really, that's not a lot of money. By the time you pay the administrative specialist piece of that, you're looking at maybe $20,000 per agency. We still have ongoing conversations with the Douglas County Sheriff's Office and why it would be a good thing for them to come in, because adding another person to that task force, we can continue to go on and do more investigations. We still do investigations in Douglas County and prosecute in Douglas County for those. But again, it's kind of where the drug trail takes you. Where is the best location to do controlled buys and different things like that. So it's a great organization. If the funding was to be completely pulled, I think we would continue to stay in operations because it wouldn't be that huge of a hit to each agency. At the same time, it sure was a nice thing when we could fully fund those positions.
Is it drugs only, or do you have other kind of crime that you, if you encounter it, you...
Gangs and firearms.
Excellent.
It's also part of the investigation force of that. And it's a really good thing. And I know that the state, I know the governor's budget has, I want to say, roughly it would be money that would equal, I think, around $225,000. But again, that's a draft budget. And until June 30th or whenever that magical day is that they finalize that, if they can do that within the 105-day session, that we would know. So we're not going to count again the egg before... The chicken before the egg hatches.
No order before law. Yeah. Well, have you, in your experience, found that it's easier to work with this many jurisdictions? Does one person take the lead so that you have a commanding officer? How do you get all these pieces to move together?
So how we are currently set up today, the Chelan County Sheriff's Office has been the lead agency, I think, since 2004. I believe it was the Wenatchee Police Department before that. So we've been significant. Well, so what that looks like, and for multiple years, we had a sergeant that runs that, and then that sergeant reports to their agency. So the Chelan County Sheriff's Office being the lead agency, our chief of special operations is the commander of that, and then the sergeant that's one of our employees reports to that commander. And then, again, so it's a combination of he is running and in charge of the task force, and those investigators from the other agencies are at their command. At the same time, they still have a person within their agency that they report back to because they're involved in that agency. So when we have our monthly executive task force meetings, our board is comprised of the individuals from those agencies, either a chief, assistant chief, or such, and the prosecutor's office, and the Washington State Patrol. We all come together, and then we have, an agenda that we talk about. We go over financials, we go over operations and staffing and training and different things like that. So all budgetary things have to be approved and voted on by the executive board.
You had a recent bust that amounted to 50 grams of methamphetamine. Is that the drug you see the most, or are we seeing a lot of opioids? Because I hear about the crisis, but I don't know if opioids are actually sold on the street around here.
They are. Opioids has been a huge problem, but I know recently methamphetamines has been making a comeback. I believe I've seen some information from our local people talking about, the Mexican market and how that some of that stuff has been pumped into Canada and such. But, yeah, there's a problem on both sides of those, Michael. I don't think I fully answered the question on the staffing of there. So, again, we have the lead. So we assign a sergeant and a detective to that task force, and then the other agencies just have one employee down there. And at one time, the Chelan County Sheriff's Office, for about 10 years, had three. They had a sergeant and two detectives, and we just said, hey, it's about time for that we start sharing the wealth.
That's
here.
A big load.
And rather than the Chelan County Sheriff's Office taking it on, we have a great partnership going on and continue to have some discussion with the Douglas County Sheriff, Kevin Morris, on that. Again, he's got to be able to go and convince his commissioners why it's a good thing. I'm 100% convinced it is, and anybody that's a player of that will. But again, I would hope that the commissioners would see a reason that they want to be part of this team, because it's not just about jurisdictions and where the prosecution or where the arrest comes from. It's, our drug epidemic doesn't draw boundary lines and say, oh, let's play on this side of the sandbox or let's play on this side of the sandbox. No. They go and do as it happens. And so we need to react to that and say, if we don't work collaboratively together and to talk about what is the big picture here in North Central Washington, especially in this valley along on both sides of the river, I think it's important. Because there's times the investigations will take our team out of the area, Grant County, maybe the Tri-Cities, Yakima, even into Snohomish County, and do some big investigations. And then they work with the other regional drug task force that's from those areas as well, and we've seen some great results from that.
That's the voice of the Chelan County Sheriff, Brian Burnett. We'll be back to talk about four little numbers.
Anything. So I want to say thank you for your business. The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 12:38. I'm Michael Knight. My very special guest is the Chelan County Sheriff, Brian Burnett. We're talking about a number of items, but now we're going to talk about a law that was passed, I guess, back in the election when you were reelected, Sheriff. There was also an initiative on the state ballot called 1639, which has caused some sheriffs to declare that they are hesitant to enforce it. But let's start at the top. When that law passed, did you react to it negatively? Did you react to it positively? Did you even think it was a big deal?
I reacted negatively to it before it was passed. I actually wrote a letter to our local newspaper asking people to both vote no for Initiative 940 and 1639. That thought it put, especially it was, we'll stick to 1639 today, was that it kind of put an unfunded mandate on some things for law enforcement offices and organizations, but also potential, I guess, it would say, kind of have a tendency to look like it would push the law-abiding citizen and turn them into criminals versus really going after and focusing on the people that are truly already violating the law.
So the law changes, the individual does nothing, and they become a criminal by fact of the new initiative.
Potentially, yeah.
Potentially. Yeah. Well, what would you do to change it, to make it right? How do you think it could be fixed?
Well, I've never been a fan of initiatives anyway, voter-led initiatives, because
every state that has them,
what happens is someone has a strong bias opinion. Whether that opinion is wrong or right, that's not what I'm focusing on, is it's not generally done in a collaborative effort.
Right.
And as much as we don't tend to like the way legislative system works sometimes within our state and the lobbyists and pushing hard, but at least everybody has their voice of how they want to be heard and why they think that law is either going to be good or not good, and what the effects, positive or negative, can be. And I know one of the things that I actually was on NPR radio here a few weeks back with another sheriff from Franklin County, and then a person from the Gun Coalition that had pushed real hard for 1639, and they said, well, you know, we did work in collaboration with law enforcement. I'm like, well, I'm on the executive board for the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs. I'm also the secretary treasurer for the Washington Sheriff's Association, and said not once did we get called to the table to say what kind of impact would this have, and for the most part was getting done. Now, can you say that there's a certain group out there that says what they're actually looking for to increase gun safety, is that a bad thing? No. But again, there's a much greater picture here, because a lot of this, when we're talking about potential Second Amendment infringement, is that really kind of works on people's emotions and brings up the fear factor. And so I think what you have to do is you have to try to eliminate those type of things and bring people to the table, say, why is this good or why isn't this bad? Is this good policy? Is this against the Second Amendment? That type of thing. So a lot of pieces involved here, Michael.
Well, among those many pieces, some sheriffs have said, well, I've looked at the law. I am not going to enforce it, which seems like a dangerous slippery slope. Not that the law is valid and they are invalid, but to say I'm not going to enforce a law, it puts the individual in jeopardy immediately with before he does anything except talk.
Absolutely. And we just had one of our semi-annual Washington State Sheriff's Association's meeting a week ago. And this was a big portion of our meeting where we discussed this, because early on there was a phone conference that happened. And, of course, not every sheriff in the state was there that agreed to draft a message that was posted on the Sheriff's Association webpage. And then again, you know, there were certain sheriffs that went above and beyond or below that message and talked differently. And they have the right to do that. I mean, as an elected official from their jurisdiction, they have the right to do that. I think what happens is there's a group of people out there that want to put you in a corner. And they want to say, you're either in this corner or that corner, and they want to force you into that corner. And I don't know necessarily that that's fair to speak, because I don't know a sheriff out there that wants to go in and violate anybody's constitutional rights. And I don't know any sheriff out there, and I work, you know, I meet with these individuals. Now, whether or not I like them personally, or we have a personality conflict, or we get along well and we've got some history and we go way back, that's besides the point. Cross the line, there's not a sheriff out there, whether it was the one that just stepped out of office or the newly elected one, that would want to cross those lines and do that. They all have their public interest best mind at heart.
Now, there was a memo today from the Attorney General that sort of clarified different parts of the law, some of which have been the most fearful parts of the law, the ones that create the most fear and loathing among the people who think that their Second Amendment right is going to be violated by law and order. They actually expected, from what I heard from the interview with the Sheriff Morris, that the State Patrol was going to be the lead agency to come to your home and take your gun, which is...
The State Patrol does not have that authority.
See?
At all.
There you go.
Yeah, and that's a big discussion. I think a lot of this has been raising fear. I've seen a lot of stuff thrown out there on social media that's just 100% totally inaccurate, or a little twist of a little bit of accuracy based on I just don't have the full story, and then people kind of run with it, and that's what we like to see. I've had a lot of people call me directly, message me, and I'll return answer emails, and if we get into too much dialogue, it can be a waste of time over email. A lot of times it's much easier to say, hey. So I'd say, hey, if you'd like to discuss this more, if I answer your question, send me a phone number and I'll set up a time and I'll call you. And I've done that with multiple individuals. And one of the first things they came at, they were angry with me. This is a person that I went to school with back in high school. And they had sent me a personal message on Facebook and said, hey, I can't believe you're selling this out, that, you know, I thought you were a true American and loved the United States.
Oh boy.
And I said, I think I don't even want to answer this. I think, you know, we should talk. I don't know where you're coming from on this, so let's at least see where you're dialoguing. And we set up a time. I think it was a day or two later. We had a phone conversation. And I just said, hey, first of all, can you tell me what you know about the initiative? And the first two or three things from them were inaccurate. And they thought there was going to be a 5-round limit on magazine capacity. Well, there's not even a magazine capacity in that initiative.
No
clause. But that is one that I know that there's a 10-round one that was, you know, potentially being introduced into legislation this year, but that wasn't part of that. And so that just said, we had, you know, hey, need to clarify this. That's not true. That's not accurate. This is the part we're talking about, so let's talk about this. When we were done with the conversation, they were more than happy and pleased from the way that I had responded. And again, but I'm never going to be please everyone, because there's people that want to draw you over to that corner over there, or there's another group of people that want to pull you into this corner over there. And I've always said, hey, if you don't know or you're concerned, let's have a personal conversation. I even had my sister-in-law message me and said, hey, I got a call from somebody and they wanted me to talk to you because they thought I would have more influence. And I said, you need to call that person and tell them if they want to talk to me, they need to contact me personally. That's the way I operate.
So if you get all your facts off Facebook, you're in deep trouble.
Yeah, there is truth on Facebook, but at the same time, there's a lot of inaccuracy on Facebook. So don't take everything to the bank based off what you're reading on Facebook.
Now, the first memo from Attorney General Ferguson was sent to the public, but not sent to you, even though it was addressed to you.
No, it was not. We received one to my personal email through the sheriff's office. I believe it was yesterday, the 4th of March. And I guess you'll talk about that. But before that, I know that there was one sent out, and it was addressed through WASPEC, which, again, is the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs. But it was not sent individually to the sheriffs. And we've identified that and basically referred to it as a press release. And it says on there, you know, addressing it like it's a letter to the sheriffs individually. But those were not sent to – I didn't receive one individually, not like I received this one through email.
Well, it seems that the latest clarification by the Attorney General means that he's been getting the same kind of phone calls you have, and people are telling him, I can't stand your law because it does this, and he says, it doesn't do that. I don't know how we got so far afield on this in terms of...
Right, and that came up again on this radio interview that we did here a couple weeks ago. And, you know, you've got multiple individuals, sheriffs, saying that we won't enforce this law, but then when you go in and talk about what they're going to do, Most of them had said, well, that's what the law says. And, you know, it doesn't, you know, one of the concerns was early on for me until I had the information, and again, we're still learning from it, was that, you know, how do you go back in for safe storage if a crime was committed by an individual that had taken a gun from somebody else's residence or business, and then they go back to say, well, how do you go in and do an investigation if I can't go to the location to determine? But it specifically says in there they're not to go, you know, that's not what they're requiring to do. So it'd be basic general information being referred up to the prosecutor's office. And again, the prosecutor doesn't have to charge.
No.
But the attorney general doesn't have, I believe, the power, from what I understand. I could be wrong, so correct me if I'm wrong, somebody out there, that they don't have the ability to come in and charge someone on this either. It'd have to be through local jurisdiction.
I wouldn't think they'd have jurisdiction, right?
No.
That's the voice of Brian Burnett. He's the sheriff of Chelan County. We'll take a pause and be right back on News Radio 560 KPQ.
You're listening to The Agenda.
Oh, admission is free.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
Our special guest today is the sheriff of Chelan County, Brian Burnett, who's been kind enough to join us for the 45-minute show. Just recently, there was a snowmobiler and his friend that were buried up in the Woodinville area. They actually got snowed in to the point where their car was invisible, and they were calling for help, and we were listening to it on the scanner at 4 o'clock in the morning. And the sheriff's deputy and the members from wildlife were trying to find these people. And what they did was they turned on their lights, their emergency lights, and drove down the road. And the guy says, "When you see the lights, tell me." Finally. And the guy through the snow said, "I see you." And they dug him out and sent him home. But they were they would have been up there for 2 days before they finally got
home. You said Woodinville, so you stumped me. I'm not sure where they were.
Well, I don't know where.
They're from Woodinville.
They didn't know where they were either. Yeah. They were on a road from somewhere to somewhere. They were all by themselves. Do you recall that incident?
I don't recall that one specific, but we've had a lot of different incidents like that in search and rescues where someone was on a ridgeline, it was foggy, it was this, and they looked like they kind of knew. They could hear the traffic from maybe Stevens Pass Highway, Highway 2. And so there's times where you just, like you said, lead them in the best you can. So, whatever works, I guess, for the situation.
These guys tried everything. They tried calling them. They couldn't get a hold of them. They were looking for the third guy who had gotten out of the car somehow and was hiking somewhere. I don't know how they found him, but they did. They were all lucky.
The thing with, cold weather incidents, Michael, is your time is real limited. When you're looking at potential hypothermia and the outcome is pretty, not a good outcome there. So it's again, different from in the summer where you say maybe, you're not looking at cold weather and moisture as much and people have a much higher rate of survival as long as they can have hydration and such.
What's on the sheriff's desk today? What do you see when you look at your desk?
What do I see? It's actually pretty organized. It's my email account that
That's
looks pretty ugly right now. It's been a pretty busy week. We've been doing our annual in-service training. So I actually was in the classroom with a bunch of our other line staff yesterday, and we covered things. What did we all cover?
Shooting, right?
We did that, but we had first aid, a block of that, and it's about a four-hour block. So we covered CPR and basic first aid stuff, combat first aid, so applying tourniquets and chest seals.
Wow.
If we go into a situation where there's actually, gunfire or something like that. Teaching our people how to actually pick someone up and evacuate them and still do cover if we still have a live shooting event. Going over excited delirium, that's a big topic these days, and how to recognize it and get that. There's a couple things we identify that we have that's a potential excited delirium, how to control the situation, and then get medical staff in there so they can sedate the individual and then do a transport, because if they don't get them emergency medical attention fairly soon, that person is likely
to go into shock.
They can likely die just based on that. And so those are some big trainings that we've been doing. And then we spent, from 2:30 to almost 8 o'clock last night out on the open range going over our gun qualification. So, yeah, when I said happy spring, I can't remember it being this cold. Right. For our annual in-service. We kind of joked and said, is there a reason we don't do this training in April? But at the same time, we say, practice, train how you normally operate. And what I mean by that is that if you're working patrol and you dress this way and this is the gear you wear, when you go to training, you need to do the exact same thing. Or you need to train in that way, so for cold weather gear, because it's much harder to manipulate and move around when you're doing, firearm drills and such, to say that you can actually say that I'm qualified and proficient at that.
Are you a good shot?
I love my 223 rifle. It's the best thing that I did. I spent about 8 years on SWAT years ago. It's really, really comfortable and proficient with that. I've had to work hard to shoot, that 90% proficiency above and beyond. But believe it or not, the way our training level and our trainers have brought our program in the last few years. Now, when I was on the SWAT team, we would generally do range once a month, and without being on that, we would do quarterly qualifications. And so saying that, that I shoot much less, but with the type of training we do now, I'm an actual better shot with my handgun than I ever was when I was on.
Muscle memory, nothing like it. So. That's the sheriff of Chelan County, Brian Burnett. Thank you so much for being here, Sheriff.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio.